Aqua Teen Hunger Force is the longest running original cartoon on Adult Swim, which is the decidedly child unfriendly block of evening programming on the Cartoon Network. Aqua Teen is distinguished by its bizarre humor and the fact that its main characters are a talking milkshake, French fries, and a wad of meat. The show is in its 11th and final season, and we sat down with the creators to talk about the show's end and about where it began.
Dave Willis, co-creator Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Right. Yeah. I'm Matt Malero, the other co-creator of Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
So the latest news is it has been announced that Aqua Teen Hunger Force is in its final season right now. It's been going on for 14, 15 years?
Yeah, 15.
It's longest running original show on Adult Swim. Why is it going away?
That's a good question. We we have a few answers for that.
Okay.
Adult Swim doesn't like money.
Yeah. They got tired of the trucks pulling up and dumping it on the loading dock.
So this was entirely a programming decision, like on the part of the
It wasn't Swim? Our decision. I mean, we would have obviously kept making it because we like it. They don't.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You just got back from San Diego Comic-Con.
Yes.
The news of Aqua Teen's demise is still pretty new. What was the reaction there among the nerds?
Have you ever seen 100,000 people all drop to their knees at once? The impact was enough to create a tsunami that engulfed Coronado Island.
Gallons of tears.
Yes.
I wasn't there, but I sensed it from Atlanta.
Gallons of cosplay tears, makeup running in the streets. So yes, there's talk of a privately funded Aqua Teen, another season of Aqua Teen, only that would be privately funded by you, the listener.
Yeah.
And you'd have to come to our house. We're going to have screenings at our house of the next season. Because we're going to keep making it.
Yeah. We live close by, so we're in trade houses.
Yeah. And anyone who wants to see it can come by and pay a nominal fee, and we will let them see the new season of Aqua Teen, which will be next year. It just won't be on TV anywhere. That's why it's a new revenue model. It's a new way. And, you know, and there no one can pirate it that way. They have to come to our backyards and watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What he's saying is true.
What I say is very true.
I mean, has there been talk of having it carry on? Because you both are working on other projects currently, some for Adult Swim.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been serious talk about Aqua Teen Hunger Force finding a life beyond Adult Swim?
Didn't Netflix? Didn't they call about it? I think Netflix wants to purchase it and continue making it. No, there hasn't been any talk about any life. There hasn't been any talk is the weird part.
We don't own it. So yeah. It's like, so any talk would happen with the owners of the show.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make a proper analogy for how that would work. Like if you were going to make more, it's more like we're mowing the lawn. And if somebody wants their lawn mowed, they come to us, but we'd be like, we don't have a lawnmower.
Right. And plus, we have on headphones because the lawnmower is so loud, we don't even hear them.
It's like the worst analogy ever.
No, it's a good one. It works totally.
So, I mean, going back to the sort of the beginning and talking about the show itself, so I put out on Facebook that I was going to be talking to the both of you.
Cool.
And I sort of asked, you know, crowdsourced.
7 likes.
Yeah. I asked if anybody would have any questions they want to ask you, and the main ones that I got back were like, why is the show so weird? And I wanted to kind of push through that, because yes, the show is weird, but it's not just weird. Can you talk about some of the creative work that actually goes into making the show, and you know, the things that you find funny?
Well, we have a lot of liberties with it to be weird because it's a cartoon and they're food products. A lot of the things that happen in the show have actually happened to us in real life. So we draw on real life experiences and then we enhance them with the magic of animation.
So as with the current season, the Harry Bus,
mm-hmm.
this
This came from real life. Sure.
So, you guys trying to murder me?
You ain't alive. You're a boss.
I live just as you, sir. I am the offspring of the unholy union of man and bus.
Yeah, it was Dave went on this bus.
Remember that? The fur bus. There's a bus that goes around town, but I've never been on it. I've heard about it, and I was like, what makes this thing so special that you'd want to rent it on your bachelor party? And then it just sounded like a funny idea that there'd be a bus like that was alive and that digested bachelors on their wedding the night before their wedding.
Yeah.
And of course he had a brother.
And then of course he has a brother.
Who's not Harry.
Yeah. This is where we start to get to the point where we're enhancing from
real reality.
So the show had its debut in 2000.
I believe at 4 a.m. on Christmas morning.
The lucrative hour of 4 a.m. I don't know why. I think there was like a budget reason behind that or something. Like it needed to hit that year's budget, but they didn't want to roll it out yet. So they just stealth premiered it at a time before TiVo. And I think that was the reason why.
Yeah. And I mean, this is a technique that I've seen Adult Swim use pretty liberally lately with the too many cooks phenomenon that was aired once at like 4 o'clock in the morning and somebody just happened to catch it.
But now it's a different world, where you can just record and then you can just, and then anyone can just steal it and put it on the internet and then they make money for what someone else actually worked hard on. And it's a different world. But back then, I don't even think TiVo was out yet. And if it was, it wasn't that prevalent.
So what was Aqua Teen Hunger Force before it was this thing? It doesn't strike me as the kind of thing that launches out fully formed. Go into a little bit of the origin.
Well, Aqua Teen, Dave and I wrote these characters into a Space Ghost show back when we were working on Space Ghost. And I think we did 20-plus drafts of that script. And it was never approved to get produced because they hijacked the whole show and Space Ghost didn't have anything to say. And then when Ghost went on hiatus, Dave and I said, let's see if we can do this show. And we said, can we do this show? And they were like, no. Can we please do it? No. And then we pitched it. We had to pitch it. And then we got a little money to make the pilot, but we still had to make more Space Ghosts. So we were scrambling we're only allowed to make six, and we were going to think about how to wrap it up at number six. And then we just started drinking, and I can't remember the rest of it.
I mean, is this where the non-canon nature of the show, characters die, entire houses are blown up, things just go completely off the rails by the end of an episode, and the next episode, back, no explanation. Is that where that came from?
Well, I mean, there's a long history of that in cartoons, right? And also, I think we were encouraged to be sort of willfully weird, with Space Ghost. And when we started making Aqua Teen, we didn't really, I don't think we fully knew how to make a cartoon just yet. I think we thought we did, but then we sort of started to figure it out. And also the things that make you laugh. And you also have a quarter hour, so you're not going to get bogged down with a lot of B story and a lot of sort of classic sitcom stuff that I think both of us find pretty boring anyways. And, we wanted to do something different and unique. And we pretty much violate all the rules, I guess, if there are any rules. But when you mentioned back whether it was fully formed or not, and it feels like we sort of hive-minded it into some place where I know we added things as we went and came up with different ideas, but there's something about it that did feel like it came out like an egg, fully formed in a way. I mean, when we did finally sort of piece the entire idea together, I don't know. It wasn't like the process of a lot of thinking and toiling on a stone. It was like, it felt really quick,
Yeah, I feel like we had the characters pretty much developed. We were just barely working on them. I feel like the show found itself with the Moonanites episode, which was number 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And we're like, this is what the show is. I think we always knew what it was. We were just trying to figure out how to make it because we had to do everything. I mean, we spent lots of money and time messing up the animation. We had to go back and redo it. And I mean, we kind of knew what we had and what we wanted to do with it. And the other thing is we had a lot of freedom. I mean, Dave and I just did what we thought was funny, and people kind of left us alone and let us do it.
And they, you know, they didn't have a lot of adventures because we just couldn't afford a lot of backgrounds, you know? Yeah. It's like Meatwad became this stupid guy that only turned into a hot dog or an igloo because those are the only two shapes we could afford, you know? So it was like, it's almost like, you know, when you make a levee for a river, you know, and then it's not going to spread out across the land. It's just going to, the water's just going to flow deeper and deeper.
Now, that's a good analogy.
There
that's
you
the
go.
One you should have used for Comic-Con.
That's the one I should have used instead of the lawn mowing thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, we have all these limitations, so go deeper with it instead of try to fight up against these limitations and just do a crappy job of it. Now you're stroking your chin, making fun of me.
No, I'm thinking about it. Like, oh, yes, you're exactly right.
Now, I mean, the last decade and a half that you've been making this show, how have you seen Adult Swim and even, like, other cartoons outside of that network? How have you seen that evolve in the last 15 years?
Wow. Like, I mean, there was nothing like Adult Swim when we were doing it, and suddenly everybody was trying it.
I mean, there was that glimmer of Liquid Television on MTV in the 80s, I guess, in the late 80s. And that's something that everyone sort of cites is you talk to show creators and they all sort of had something that they enjoyed off of that.
Yeah. And this is stuff like going way back to Aeon Flux and the early Beavis and Butthead. And,
mm-hmm. Yeah, Jack Mack and Rude Boy, just all these sort of weird little cartoons. But I always like to say that we were sort of the shortest thing on TV, you know, when we started, and now we're sort of like the longest thing on the internet, you know, and everybody's attention span has changed and what they want out of a show. But oddly, on other networks, I don't really see a whole lot of trafficking in this same sort of direction. It still feels like the cartoons haven't changed all that much. The other cartoons that people are trying to do, they're still trying to do these classic sort of half-hour, you know, reinventions of The Simpsons, and for lack of a better.
Yeah. Well, and the part of the reason for that is because there's a lot of money invested in those shows, and so they have to fit a template that's going to work, that's been proven. And that's the cool thing about Swim, is there's not a lot of money invested in these shows and episodes, and it's sort of like a lab where you just try something. And if it's that unique that makes you laugh, you just do it. It doesn't matter if it's solidly formed, pretty much.
Yeah. Were there ever ideas that that you threw at Aqua Teen that didn't quite work out that wound up going on to finding life elsewhere?
You know, interesting enough, there were more ideas that we saved from Space Ghosts that didn't make it that ended up in Aqua Teen. We probably have a few seasons worth of villains that were in Space Ghost show at one time that didn't quite make the cut, and then we put them in Aqua Teen, and they performed brilliantly.
There were a couple of episodes that I'm trying to think of that we wanted to write that we couldn't. There was something called Laser Cowboy that we wrote this season, and Aqua Teen just sprung out of I think boredom from the both of us with writing Space Ghost. You know, where we just created these characters because we were just sort of bored writing that. And we wrote something called Laser Cowboy that was an episode of Aqua Teen where the Aqua Teens don't even appear. They basically stolen Carl's Roku box and his Wi-Fi to watch this whole season of Laser Cowboy that's being put out on some Netflix thing. And then it was just going to be a whole episode of Laser Cowboy, live action. And so we didn't get to make that, but we have a script and we love that. We were going to do an episode where Seth Green moves in next door to the Aqua Teens, right?
Yeah.
Because he's going to play Meatwad in a movie.
Yeah.
And he wants to start hanging out with Meatwad.
Yeah, to see learn how Meatwad. From him.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we were told that we couldn't ask Seth about it or make eye contact with Seth.
Or even we had to delete his phone number from our cell phones.
Oh, here's a good one. We were going to do an episode where the Aqua Teens take the CNN tour. And Meatwad is bitten by Wolf Blitzer and becomes a wolf man.
Yeah. We got in a lot of trouble for that.
We emailed Wolf Blitzer directly. And he responded to us directly. And we were like, aren't you busy in Afghanistan? And he just responded back that said, you know, this should probably go through publicists, but it doesn't sound like something I'm allowed to do. But that was nice and courteous.
Yeah.
And then we were told, you better shut your computers down right now.
shut them down. You never call them again.
So the two of you are based here in Atlanta. The production's based here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Has the location affected the show at all? Like, not being in another more obviously entertainment-centric place like L.A. or New York?
I think it's probably made it better because we can the people we work with are locals mostly, the key people, and it's you know, it's not as pummeled with notes and renovations. You know, I think that plus it's sort of like, no, it's not even really on the radar. We just kind of make it. I think it's awesome that everybody's based out of here. It's like we can do a lot of stuff from here.
I think the influence too is probably pervasive in a way that we maybe don't even recognize because we're both Southerners, and there's such an element of that that's just, you just don't even think about, you know. But I think like Meatwad kind of started sounding a little more Southern after like the third or fourth episode, and we just never changed it, you know. He just started to have this drawl which made him even dumber. And I think of that episode Bloonenstein where he's just like, do what now? It just sort of seems like something you'd hear someone say off the back of a
truck
full of roofers. I said, put them shingles up there, do you want now?
Can you tell me about the rest of the cast of the show? It's a relatively small group of people who are lending their voices to this thing. How much input do they have on these characters?
You know, Dana is amazing. He has a lot of input on. He's such a great ad libber in the room.
And this is Dana
Snyder,
who plays
Master Shake.
Dana Snyder. Okay.
Yeah. I remember we cast him because we had put out a casting call, and he had a friend of Dave's knew him, and he just left a voicemail. He's like, "Hey, this is Dana Snyder. I heard you're," and we're like, "That's the guy. Just get him."
There. Now, I do not ever want to catch you about to think about doing the thing that you are about to think about doing ever again. Is that clear?
So,
yeah, we didn't know how the guy was going to sound. I was sort of doing this version of the Moonanite. What became one of the Moonanites, just this dancing is forbidden. And it was pompous, you know, but it just didn't have that thing, you know, and we get all these voiceover auditions that were terrible, and this girl that I used to date knew Dana, and then we got him to do an audition, and then we accidentally erased it, right?
Yeah. But then we immediately booked tickets to Vegas to go record him.
Yeah. Yeah, and he had a demo. Our boss was like, you know, do you have a demo for his other work? And he sent this cassette. This is back
like
then, cassette.
Like a TDK.
Of a demo that he had cut together in college for one spot for Ronzoni Noodles that he had written. Like, it's great with Ronzoni Noodles. And, you know, and you can imagine, I mean, no pasta company is going to buy airtime to promote their noodle product. Like, it's so off the chart. Like, so clearly he didn't know what he was doing with cutting together a voiceover demo. And he was working in a bookshop, you know, a drama bookshop. Like, and I listen to him now, and I hear him, and I'm like, you should have a role on every cartoon on the planet. Like, you're so good. But it blows my mind that we were so lucky to have him sort of fall in our lap.
What was it about, like, this very green person who, you say, did not know what he was doing.
But so, he was very confident, and he's classically trained. I mean, instantly, there was no confusion about what to do, you know, and it didn't take long for him to add his own flourish to the lines.
Like, so he just came in and got the character.
We found our way with him, I mean, 50-50.
No doubt.
And the fellow that plays Frylock, who is that?
That's Kerry Means. He's local as well. You know, originally there was a different Frylock. We had hired this guy. He was a truck driver. And he just didn't quite hit it. But, you know, Kerry came along somehow. He was doing, Was he on Us first or Thundercleese?
No, he was on, he'd done a promo for Cartoon Network, and we found out about him through that. And then he became Thundercleese on Bragg Show about the same time.
Yeah.
But I think we got him first. But yeah, another guy that's very, you know, he's classically trained, local. I think he went to, I want to say he went to Morehouse, but he's just natural on the mic, you know. I think he very much, it didn't take him much to kind of get what we were trying to do with the character. And, you know, he added another dimension to it too, you know, where, you know, he's a part-time nerd and sort of trying to be cool. And, you know, and that's a little bit of Carrie as well, you know. So,
yeah. Carl was, wasn't he Vinny in a Space Ghost show that
we
never saw?
He was supposed to be Dominic,
Dominic,
Space Ghost's next door neighbor.
Yeah.
And he'd come down to Space Ghost and go, hey, you stayed up awful late dancing to your Britney Spears there. Were you planning on shutting that down after midnight, or am I going to have to go over there and wrap a tire iron around your head? And, yeah. That never got made either.
That's a good, that's a good impression of him.
It is.
So the season, how many more episodes are there in the season?
We've aired 2 of 10. So
three. Wow. Three, I think.
3 of 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 7 more.
I mean, as you're wrapping up work on Aqua Teen, maybe forever. Not to get too heavy, but what is the show leaving behind? What are you leaving behind with this show?
$1 billion.
Dollars.
A lot of money still on the table.
Dollars. Yeah, I mean, we put 15 years of our career into this show, you know, and all our strongest ideas and work, you know, and I think you'd like to think it's going to last or at least be in reruns for another 4 more years. I don't know. I don't think it really... I don't know. Maybe it'll come back. I mean, cartoons don't ever die. Alan Alda gets older, you know. His window to be Hawkeye again is pretty much over.
That war is over, too.
That war is over, done. Too. Yeah, there was a finite period where that war was being fought. And to bring Alan Alda back
it's
to shoot more episodes.
It's unrealistic to do that. Dude. It doesn't make sense.
No, I mean, I would never compare us to MASH. Cheers. I would compare us to...
Seinfeld.
Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Yes.
The final season of Aqua Teen Hunger Force Forever airs Sunday nights at midnight on Adult Swim. For WABE, I'm Mike Johns.